Well, I haven't been back in Cork since 2007. It's been entirely too long. So how's everyone doing?
Hey!
You sound all like you have a pair. That includes the girls. Ron, how are you doing?
Hey!
That's marginally better. So I'm going to start with the only poem that I've ever actually read as a featured poet that actually caused a host to burst into tears, so we'll see if you're made of sterner stuff. It's by a friend of mine named Ernie Hilbert, a sonnet called Domestic Situation. Maybe you've heard about this, maybe not. A man came home and chucked his girlfriend's cat in the wood chipper. This really happened. Dinner wasn't ready on time. A lot of other little things went wrong. He spat on her father, who came out when he learned about it. He also broke her pinky, stole her checks, and got her sister pregnant. She stood by him, stood strong through it all, because she loved him. She loved him, you see. She actually said that, and then she went and married him. She felt some unique call. Don't try to understand what another person means by love. Don't even bother. Okay, and I promised my publisher, yes, the book is available, Seven Towers. They are leg breakers. So, you know, preserve my legs. Probably the most portentously titled poem in the collection, Why There Is No Socialism in the United States of America in 20 lines or less. At 4:15 a.m., the city bus had pulled up to the curb, its silhouette marked dimly by the light that crept through grates fencing in empty stores. I made my fare and squeezed beside a sleepy barnyard girl. She moved a centimeter to her left, away from me, and twitched a pinkish nose below gray narrowed eyes, accusing me of something. So I leaned against the glass and stared at greasy distant streaks of light. Each one of us was tired, pissed off, and bored. Angry with the hour and with those pricks. That fat-ass bitch who muttered at a cell phone. That rat-faced airline worker at the front. That punk-ass hoodlum staring at his feet. That stuck-up twat. That sad-eyed, brown-haired schmuck. Gawking at New York's pre-dawn backlit blackness. And if we were united, our disdain for every dumb shit creep, in short ourselves, had fused our isolations into one. Okay, so this next one almost goes against my better judgment. There's kind of this inevitable part of poetry readings where, like, someone is explaining the Pygmalion and Galatea story, and, you know, you're trying to kind of remember it for that, you know, one line, about line 15, where it's going to be referred to, and you're just going, okay, Pygmalion, Galatea, maybe like statuary, oh, shit. So this is my moment like that. This poem draws heavily on the Bible, Daniel chapter 5, where the basic story is the original writing on the wall. So what happens is you've got King Belshazzar of Babylon. He's having a few brewskis with his buddy. And they're just kind of hanging out. They're having a good time. You know, they've thrown some, you know, steaks on the barbecue and all that sort of thing. And all of a sudden, this disembodied hand appears and writes many, many technical parts. Now, you probably don't know what the hell that means, neither do they. So they bring in the prophet Daniel. He says, oh, that means you're about to get your butts kicked by the Persians, and they say, thank you for your time. So, yeah, Bible stories make interesting, I hope. So this is the sort of backing metaphor of that poem. Just sort of let it suffuse you. Thou art weighed in the balances. This is the story of a bunny. Add batteries and watch him go in every unforeseen direction. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Commercial broadcasts for elections. Settle down. Enjoy the show. Yes, we can, or Boston Harbor. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Now, someone whispering on my shoulder, angel, devil, I don't know. Signs and wonders, choices, choices, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Dream of graphs that rise like mountains, settle for a slight plateau. It's all downhill. The lift is broken. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Fireworks and a beer-soaked picnic, old lang syne hung mistletoe, same old headache in the morning, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. This bunny is not a mere digression, saying it won't make it so. 3 minutes to your show's resumption, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Pick a designated driver. Use protection. Just say no. This is the blood of Christ, go figure. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Another loophole in the system. Palms explode. Volcanoes glow. Markets plunge. There goes the weekend. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. That Pinkford prick is always drumming, pushing onward to and fro, mene, mene, tekel, farsin. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. So this next one I actually wrote after my sojourn living over here for a couple of years, and got back to Brooklyn and was hanging out in this, shall we say, trendy hipster scumbag bar called Pete's Candy Store off Lorimer Street in Brooklyn, near where I live, like the yuppie scum I am. Talking with a buddy of mine, and he said, you know, in a year none of us are going to have jobs. So this is kind of my poem, thinking about that, having just come back to New York in a period in which, you know, we were pretty much expecting, you know, the poor ice caps to melt and, you know, drown all of us while we were lining up for unemployment benefits. It's called Brooklyn 2008. We plunge to winter. Economic graphs show more troughs than peaks and promise further chills ahead in the coming weeks. Sales down. The stores are cutting prices, although to small avail. Bills for shadowing repo men show up in the mail. Still, Christmas shoppers mill in Fulton Mall and out in Prospect Park. The yuppies follow happy dogs until the sky gets dark, until the weather drops a bit too much, until the rent increases. Until the insurance won't pay up when faced with new diseases. To think, there'd have to be a protest march with banners or a riot. There's a light breeze in the heights. In Park Slope, all seems quiet, and only stops away in Williamsburg, the bars stay open late, spelling out their bright young things in a fragile, altered state. a psychiatric trade is always brisk. In little rooms like priests, they listen. We confess our sins, and for a time at least, it's figured out. Until the week's events circle to a chair and soothing prints along the wall, and a sympathetic stare. And in that office, stammered sentences flow as the thoughts cohere. The low-key power plays at work, the shrapnel of a year spent dodging each misfortune that arrives in this wave or the next. Company memos, budget cuts, the unmoved fair sex, and back on the subway, headphones set to stun, echo with the crash of waves of sound against the air. Quicker than the lash of ebbs and flows of eyes that scan the ads plastered on the train. Learn English. Start a new career. Do you suffer pain? But where's the toll-free number you can call when it gets cold and wet? Or to check the status of a dream that's come to nothing yet? The tide recedes into a half-read book and breaks on strangers' faces back and forth. Though we believe, somehow, we're going places. You're in a multiplex and wondering just how it came to this. Beautiful people making love. In cinematic bliss, their shyness overcome. It's just great until the second act of obstacles soon overcome. You want your money back. Back on the city street, it's still December. The sun's in short supply as armies of overcoats go past. The film's set in July, and somewhere someone's working on a tan, and sometimes love's enough. And someone's blonde, and someone's rich, but someone's life is rough, and someone's house foreclosed is up for sale, and someone's at work. A frenzied crowd has crushed the life out of a Walmart clerk. Trampled like a wrapper from a candy bar sticking to a shoe as busy patrons rush the shelves. What do you think they do? So snarl at the cold and thrust a fist of coins at a gibbering bum. Good home, relax, and brush your teeth before you too succumb to the dissipation of a summer day seen on cellular. A feeling lingers, though it shifts, soon to be redeployed. And all the same, the luxury of scorn is some small blessing still, a sign of better things to come, or maybe of free will. The sense that we remain in some control of bank accounts and crushes, despite the crush of markets. In the squeeze of Christmas rushes. Yesterday's headline. Jobless figures surge. The market's in a drought, bringing on a greater thirst. Best spend the weekend out and waffle on exhibits at the Met or recent politics, like post-it notes of conversation. Let's hope something sticks. The friends and strangers sitting at a bar and ready cutting quips, blending into the soundscape till the CD jukebox skips and as a chord resounds ad infinitum. All the chatter stops. The barman programs in a track. New song from the top. The women are all beautiful and bright. The men are fit and clever. We'll all be plowed by closing time. For now, it holds together like pop song lyrics of non sequiturs, but isn't it ironic. Posing as poised and debonair with another gin and tonic. Hangover. Just the standard easy fix of aspirin and food, of diner coffee drunken sips. The thought that life is good with buttersome waffles and a Spanish song with an upbeat refrain. Sustaining that smug certainty that you'll be here again. And as the feeling lurking in the pain oozes out bit and bit, you wonder why you do it. Well, nobody gives a shit, nor do you. Despite the second thought that came too late at 7, you've moved on to the sausages and swear that this is heaven. We hurt because we can, not since we must. The difference is essential, a fine distinction in the end, but somehow fundamental to all those bar tabs on the credit card, the freely flowing cash, the love affair with the ATM, the mouth silted through with ash. But as the headline dulls into a throb, the headline comes in clearer, the same thing as the day before, but ever so slightly nearer. So, take another aspirin and gulp your orange juice and pray that the bill will not come due between now and Saturday. Bless the false dawn of a timeless gloom. The train just out of sight, the blaze of headlights, the screech of brakes, the way our eyes alight at the seemingly infernal glow. No! Blink. Expel the thought. Like papers in a bin, a fleeting flash of details we forgot somewhere between the bagel and the beer, between a boom hello and that goodbye we parted on. Stand up. It's time to go, not into sunset or uncertain dawn, but on. A sort of prayer. Chants mingling in a muted hum and lingering in the air. Leave the train and start our ambles home in mobile meditation as words congeal with clear intent, but uncertain punctuation. And if the phrases crumple into sound and ricochet off curves like rubbish tossed aside by drums, we shouldn't be disturbed. Night will give way soon enough to sounds of car alarms and voices drowning out the subtler sense of our dubious choices and second guesses of the two-room flats for which we paid rent, or calculations of the cash waiting to be spent. And blessed be you. Despite this empty hour, wherever you might be, awake in other time zones, or scant blocks away from me, and if we haven't spoken, I can still recall an obsolete address. I clutch the phone and pantomime the numbers that I press. The numbers doubted. Leave it till tomorrow. Leave it now, full stop and paragraph. Get through the door and take it from the top. Brush your teeth, retreat into your bed, and think of gentler things, the wondrous quiddity of day the morning always brings. The context staked out just beyond the door, a cough with an angry frown, without a warrant, but still alert for when one's guard goes down. Leave the thought unspoken, save in dreams that float out past the docks like ships. Or trash to far away, or founder on rocks. Okay, one last one. That cool, everybody?
Yeah.
Okay, this one is not in the slightest bit pretentious. So this comes from in New York City, the city where I live. I went to see a film by Truffaut at the Alliance Française. It was like unbelievably pretentious. There's like this French woman who had like horrendously mind fucked me, screws up. And so, you know, it was kind of my take on the audience of which I was inevitably a part, you know, those of us who, like, you know, if a film doesn't have subtitles, it isn't a real movie. Yeah, I really am that much of a prick. So it's called Art House Cinema. Opening credits. Accordion music joined by clarinets. And then the director's name. A cityscape, a human form. Still just a silhouette. A shot. The shadows down. A quick escape as the well-known actor's name bursts through the gloom, followed by the girls. In this room, we know the plot already. From a class or film or book review, what to expect from the director's work. And we can pass a retrospective and a familiar name, a shibboleth of awe, at least respect or reverence, the reason that we came. So, think cliches. How opposites attract, how he met her, or how the fight was won, the underdogs who carry the second act with dignity. Although it seemed good fun. But here, tonight, it's slightly more abstract in black and white. And this is how we like it. You take the convention, batter it, and strike it with something else. The opening scenes begun on a European street. All age and shadows, early summer heat implied by the heroine in a svelte sundress, delicate and thin as a modish cigarette. The actress will get cancer, but not yet. And the hero of the caper sips coffee as he burrows through the paper at a picturesque cafe. Ironic, home, since trouble's on the way, and the actor speaks his lines, subtitled, sure, but we all think that's fine, despite the bad translation. And we revel in the iconic situation and settle further in our seats to see what lies in store for them, and you, and me. On clock. The griminess of plot and seedy bars that dot the film like tumors as our hero chain smokes from misfortune, dodging cars in search of a fortune or reprieve, draws out. And as we go from a racing speed to zero, we stop for a moment near a waterfront. The key is to always get it. Not to pause or linger on ideas till the end, but focus on procedure, the swift caress of tracking shots, the way the lights portend significance, that slight off-kilter clause in the sentence. It's all in the technique. 50 years ago, or just last week, her face has stayed that oval of remorse, her line that classic of the femme fatale, though only understood as text, of course, in yellow script. This is what we seek. In shadows and caves, suggestions of celluloid, a moving, pure alignment of it all. Extras in the background play cards. The city's emptiness becomes a void beyond established landmarks. Her and him. Or maybe not. Although they're at the center of the shot, an alternate dimension between the exposition of the plot and some conclusion. It will skirt convention. But still we linger. This is the money shot. The poster on the wall, the cultured heart on, the pregnant moment that the lovers part on, to be reunited only near the end in farcical mischance that hardly matters. Despite the car chase and the final splatter, this is the mise-en-scène that will transcend the train ride home. The vagaries of style. We won't forget his shout, her rueful smile. Closing credits. Darkness. Always darkness at the start, and silence till the closing credits roll. Each one of us retreats into ourselves, an act of solipsism for the art of reverential silence. of control of feelings that we cannot call our own. Our actions stay in cool within our bundle of clothes, and all are fooled by silent soliloquies that argue with the images one sees on screen or in the slush of a February night. The sluggish rush to reach the train slows down. Is that something glowing in the brown of a melting pile of snow? What's that doing there? We don't quite know. A cast-off cigarette lies in a drift, smoldering and wet. And then we walk away to the city street, a different shade of gray and a static traffic jam. And you're still you, and I'm still who I am.